Ultrasound Gel Podcast.
Ultrasound Gel Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Ultrasound Gel Podcast. Today I am joined by Michael Pratz and a special guest, Delia Gold, to help us actually read a pediatric article because I don't really know how to read those. What we're learning today is the results of this crazy study is entitled Point of Care Ultrasound Could Streamline the Emergency Department Workflow of Clinically Nonspecific Intussusception. And this was published in Pediatric Emergency Care and done in the year 2017. Now, Delia and Mike, I got two questions for you. What is this and what is clinically nonspecific intussusception?
Well, as the pediatric specialist in the group, I'll go ahead and give some background.
Please.
As we all know, intussusception is it's kind of a temporary small bowel obstruction, temporary in that it gets reduced and hopefully it goes away. That happens in toddlers, but it really can be up to 6 years of age. And in fact, I've had cases that were even older than that due to like anatomic abnormalities. But the traditional intussusception that we're talking about is usually a toddler or a young child between 6 months and 3 years of age that's having intermittent, colicky, severe abdominal pain. Clinically nonspecific intussusception is not a known definition. I had to read through the paper to figure out what they were talking about. But really what they were alluding to is what I just mentioned, which is that no one has the triad unless they've been kind of sitting at home for days with the symptoms. It takes a while to get that current jelly stool because it means the bowel is ischemic. Right now, most people, if you think about it, you just do the ultrasound. And so there's a really high rate of negative studies. It's not that common of a diagnosis. I would say, you know, I don't know the numbers, but it's rare, but we often do the study because it's just such a bad thing to miss.
So you're not getting a lot of yield on the test, and that was making the radiologists unhappy at this institution, it sounded like. They were concerned that, well, it's a rare diagnosis, but we're ordering a lot of tests, so they're only going to be positive a small percentage of the time, and then what that does is the people that are doing the test are less motivated to do it because they start to think it probably doesn't matter. But I think it was a cool idea. So they identified the population that seemed to be most low risk for this diagnosis. That's what I think they're getting at with the clinically nonspecific symptoms. They defined it by just having one of the triad and then having a positive ultrasound.
Well, it was one of the class triad and or vomiting.
So let me tell you how they did this. This was retrospective and a before and after design. So essentially, at a certain point, they instituted a point-of-care ultrasound protocol for intussusception, and they were comparing 2 years before that to the 2 years after implementing that. And what that protocol consisted of was that providers in the emergency department were trained in point-of-care ultrasound for intussusception, and patients that came in with this non-specific intussusception were enrolled in this protocol. Because if they were too high risk or they had all of the symptoms, then they just went straight to get a radiology ultrasound because they could potentially do the therapeutic intervention at the same time. But if they were kind of wishy-washy, maybe they have it, maybe they don't, then they could be enrolled here. So they all got this ultrasound. If it was positive, they went to get a radiologist performed ultrasound. If it was negative, they could potentially be discharged or observed for a while. And what they're looking for between these two groups, the before and after groups, they were trying to see how many of their ultrasounds were positive, what percentage ended up being positive. And also they're looking at the outcomes of the patients. Did they need more surgeries? Did they have to be admitted more? Did they have longer observation times? So Delia, if you know, maybe a four-year-old kid rolls in, he has kind of a story for this, and you were going to do the point-of-care ultrasound yourself, what are you looking for there?
What you would look for is kind of the stereotypical signs or the signature of intussusception on ultrasound. So you would use a high-frequency linear probe would be ideal, so you can get good differentiation of the bowel layers. Some people talk about where to start. There's differing opinions. Starting in the right lower quadrant and would make a good mix. You can make a good argument for that because that's where the most clinically significant intussusception would start. You can get intussusception anywhere in the bowel, but a small bowel to small bowel intussusception, although may be causing pain, is not something that is potentially surgical and doesn't need further intervention. Really, we talk, when we say intussusception, we mean ileocolic. And so starting in the right lower quadrant, you're right in the area that you would be concerned about. With that said, up in the right upper quadrant, you have a really good acoustic window through the liver, and you can really make out bowel intercepting on itself really well. So some people actually start, and it tends to go up that high. If it's, it will go at least up to the right upper quadrant a lot of the time if you have it. We get concerned about it not being able to be reduced if it goes past the hepatic flexure and starts moving towards the left upper quadrant. So some people will actually start up there because it's a really clear view. What you're looking for is, you know, you're going to look both in the transverse and longitudinal view of the bowel. And if you're looking transverse, you should see a target sign, as you do with basically any kind of bowel problem like appendicitis, and see all the layers of the bowel kind of telescoped on each other in cross-section, so it'll look like a target. In the longitudinal view, it would be what they could call a pseudo-kidney, because it kind of does resemble a kidney, especially in the right upper quadrant, or a hay fork sign, which I had to look up. Yeah. I mean, I'm a city girl, so didn't really know what that was. I looked it up. It looks like a devil's pitchfork. That's with a little bit of curve to it. So if you can picture that, or you could Google it. But that's what you would see, and that would make you concerned, obviously, for intussusception.
So the results of this study, they ended up having 160 kids after their exclusion. And what they found was primary outcome number one, they did have a higher rate of positive ultrasounds, which is what they wanted. It went from 33% before their protocol to 59% after the protocol. So that means that they had successfully identified a group of patients that had higher risk of intussusception and ended up having it. So that was good for them. That's what they wanted. The secondary outcome about some of their length of stay, the post group did have a shorter length of stay. So before 14.26 hours, after about 10 and a half hours.
Can you imagine being in the hospital for 14 hours?
Sounds like a normal day.
Yeah. That's crazy.
No, but one thing that was interesting about the length of stay results was they broke it down actually into every component of their length of stay. So the time until they got the ultrasound, the time until they got the intussusception reduced, and then the time of observation. And the bulk of this difference came from the reduced observation time. So the time between the other things was on the matter of like 20 minutes or 15 minutes usually. But the time between the observations pre and post was where they saved a couple hours.
Yeah, and I have a couple theories on that. They don't really go into it, so it is just conjecture. One reason might be that they mentioned in the article that the patients that had radiology scans only tended to have a much more severe intussusception, with some of the secondary signs that they talk about in the article, like large lymph nodes, free fluid in the bowel wall, various things that maybe they waited because it, I don't know if because POCUS is faster, that they waited a little bit longer before they got the scan. And so those patients are going to get observed longer after. They potentially would be higher risk for a problem or needing surgery. So they maybe in their protocol decided to watch them longer because they were, but you'd have to assume they're sicker and they don't break down that very well. The other thing I just wondered is if in their introducing their new POCUS protocol and they added five PEM or four more PEM attendings in the post group, that maybe they had evolved their protocol that the observation time intrinsically is less. Because for instance, at my institution, if it's a non-complicated AIR reduction, you basically sit for maybe 2 hours. You just have to pass a PO trial. There's no evidence that shows that a longer observation prevents people having a relapse of it. You're either going to have it or you're not. So why keep them in the hospital and wait for it? You just kind of tell the parents what to watch out for, and they'll bring them right back if it happens again. So maybe they don't go into that, but I was wondering if that had something to do with it.
Delia, I think you've hit the nail on the head here, because one of the main problems with the pre and post study is that a lot of things can change over that period of time. And we don't know that all of these results are due to their POCUS protocol. So there's, like you said, they changed their whole setup. They had more attendings. Maybe there's other things that changed in the way that they treat or triage patients that could have affected a lot of these outcomes. So it's not the best level of evidence to say, like, this is a great thing that we should all start doing. But it is thought-provoking.
Agreed.
It is. And all their reviewing the literature for pediatrics, there's really only case reports. In America, there's case reports using point of care for intussusception. And actually, the P2 network, which is the PEM POCUS network, that's a national group and has all the leaders for PEM POCUS, they're actually working on a multi-institution protocol to look further into this so that we can get a prospective trial potentially. So maybe that will help with some of these answers, because this is done in a different country with a totally different setup, and that would you have issues just with a different hospital across the street from you, let alone, you know, a different country. So I think that that will be helpful for us knowing how to go forward.
Another one of my concerns with this protocol would be discharging people with a negative point of care study, because we don't know how sensitive it is for the diagnosis on point of care. I mean, in this study, they had 100% specificity. Everyone with a positive point of care study confirmed to have intussusception on the radiologist performed study. But since a lot of people that had negative studies ended up being discharged, we don't know what happened to them. Maybe they are all dead now.
Never followed up in the hospital because they're in the morgue.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, they do try to say, well, they are the biggest shop in town, and anybody that would have come back would have come back to them, and they would have caught it and seen that, but I don't know. And to our prior point about what else has changed in between the pre and post group, they did try to mitigate that argument by comparing only the patients that got the point of care ultrasounds. So pre and post point of care ultrasound. And they saw that there was similarly a reduction in the length of stay.
The other thing that I thought was interesting is in the post group, only 40% of those patients got the point of care ultrasound. That's not even half of the group. So I think it's a bit of a jump to make a conclusion that you know for sure that this doing the point of care protocol is really going to shorten anything or make anything better when less than half the people got it in the intervention group.
Good point. So let me summarize the study. This was a pre and post study done in Korea, and they ended up having 160 patients over their study time with intussusception. What they found was that implementing a point of care ultrasound intussusception protocol increased their positive yield of their radiologist studies by weeding out those that were low risk and could be discharged. Similarly, it seemed to decrease the overall ED length of stay. My take-home points from this is that point-of-care ultrasound can potentially streamline your workflow. This makes sense, and you can save some time and stop doing some potentially unnecessary tests. However, I'm not sure it's quite ready for prime time. There's some problems with the external validity of this article, and we don't really know if this is exactly safe yet because it didn't really evaluate the sensitivity to know if these patients are going home and having any other bad outcomes. I thank the authors for performing this study, and I thank you guys for listening. If you want to find out more, go to ultrasoundgel.org, where you can sign up for our mailing list. You can check us out on Facebook or Google+. And hey, why don't you go to iTunes? Give us a great rating. We'd love it. Talk to you later.
More pressure, more gel, more pressure, more gel.
Ultrasound gel podcast.
Man, your clap is just so masculine.
I practice a lot.
You probably like cup your hands a little bit too to make it.
Well,
like
just slightly, not too much, because you need it to be a real thin little burst. Mm-hmm. If you cup it, like kind of delays.
Well, it's kind of converse, because if you do a thin cusp, it's a deeper sound. In case anybody's wondering.